Blog Talk Radio.
I hope everybody enjoyed their weekend. I certainly enjoyed mine. We're doing a lot today. We're going to talk a little bit about how the Democrats suck and they couldn't win an election or get the people on their side if the American people were with them on 90% of the issues, which kind of already is the case. It's incredible. When I give you the numbers as to the crossover voters and Democrats who will consider voting for Trump, you're going to want to put your hand in a waffle iron and then press down repeatedly. It's beyond pathetic. And then we also have the Democrats at a historic low in terms of people who identify as Democrats. This is a new poll that just came out. So two disastrous pieces of evidence for the Democratic Party. A lot goes into that. A lot goes into why the American people are turning on them and seemingly have no interest in them as a party. Needless to say, we're going to try to explore that as much as possible here. Then, of course, we have Donald Trump's antics over the weekend. Naturally, there were many more instances of this. I don't have all of them for you because if I dedicated an entire show to his antics, I could literally do that. I could fill up an hour and 30 minutes with just his antics, but we have to pick and choose here. So I don't want to spoil it for you now what he did next, but stick around. It'll either be the end of the first segment or at the beginning of the second 30-minute block that we'll break it down. And then a lot of serious stuff that nobody else is going to report to you today, like, for example, the fact that unions in America might finally get the death blow that they've been on the verge of getting for a really long time. There's been a litany of anti-union cases and laws that have been passed from the Reagan era and onwards. There's only one kind of union that still maintained some level of legitimacy and being above the fray and not being all out assaulted. That would be public sector unions, but that may be coming to an end. So when I give you the details of that one, mind equal blown. And then naturally, I mean, we got to live up to the name of the show here. Later on, Rick Santorum gets uber religious and really creepy. Ben Carson does the exact same thing. And we got epic, ridiculous pastors. I believe there's a pastor from Virginia who I'm now dubbing the Get Her Done pastor. Did I say professor? I hope I didn't say professor. He's not nowhere near a professor. He's a pastor. But he's the Get Her Done pastor, and you'll see why. So we're going to talk about all that and much more. Let's kick it off here with the bad news for the Democrats and the good news for Donald Trump. Mercury Analytics is a research company that has done work with MSNBC and Fox News, and they have a new poll out today that should definitely concern liberals. So they say that Trump's first TV ad, quote, actually resonated with Democrats more than expected. About one quarter of Democrats said they agree completely that the ad raises good points. All right, so let's pause here. That's stunning. Quarter of Democrats said Trump's first ad, which was just wall-to-wall lies and misinformation. They're like, yeah, no, decent points. All right, now it's getting scary because for a while we thought, well, yeah, Trump's bombastic and he's an idiot and he's over the top, but he's only going to get support from the Republican base, and then eventually even that'll dwindle down and forget it. He won't be leading, a month into the primary season or a month into the debates. So much for that. Not only is he leading, he has a commanding lead. Depending on which poll you look at, he has over a 20-point lead. in the national polls. Now, obviously, when you go to New Hampshire and Iowa, it's a little bit different, and other people are certainly in the race there. In fact, I think Ted Cruz is ahead of him in Iowa. But overall, he's absolutely destroying. But the fact that now there are even some Democrats who are like, maybe. Oh, that should have us all scared. And I told you guys from day one, this has very little to do with his actual policy positions because he doesn't have any policy positions. He contradicts himself every 7 minutes. He'll say something that's actually incredibly liberal, like, hey, we should do infrastructure spending and let's stay out of Syria and let other people take care of it. And then he'll flip and say, not only should we be involved in Syria, but we need to attack the family members of ISIS. So he just flip-flops all over the place. So there's got to be another thing. It's not policy that's letting him be this successful so far. It has a lot more to do with bombast and the fact that he doesn't come across like a sleazy politician. So people think wrongly, well, he must be keeping it real because of how he talks. But it's Donald Trump. Of course he's not keeping it real. Just to give you one example, as he points fingers at Marco Rubio and Jeb Bush and the rest of these guys and says, oh, my God, they're bought by billionaires and they're their puppets, he went and begged the billionaires to get money from them, and they said no. So that's when he turned around and started bashing the other candidates and the billionaires and saying that big money controls politics. Before that, it was mum's the word because he thought he might be able to get some of that money. So people are falling for it, and that's not pretty. Now, furthermore, that's just the ad. So 25% of Democrats go, well, the ad's okay. By the way, that ad, fact checkers ripped it apart. It shows a border wall in a border fence in Morocco and people running for the wall, and they portrayed it like it was in Mexico, and they say he says we're going to behead ISIS and all types of crazy shit in the ad. But you can say, well, that is just the ad, so that's not indicative of Democrats who are, for example, considering voting for him. So since the 25% is just, hey, credit where credit is due on the ad, we can let it go, no big deal. Well, here's the next fact. Quote, furthermore, about 20% of likely Democratic voters say they would buck the party and vote for Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump in a general election. Welcome to the Twilight Zone, ladies and gentlemen. Now, this isn't as concrete and solid as it suggests so far, because they go on to explain in the rest of the article on the Hill that this is in a matchup against Hillary Clinton. So Hillary Clinton, while she's leading on the Democratic side, she also has very high unfavorables. Now, if it's Bernie Sanders who he's up against, there was a poll from about a month ago, or actually a little less than that, probably 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, that found that Bernie up against Trump, Bernie wins by 13 points. He, quote, destroys him, according to the articles written on this. Not even my words, even though, you know, I have a brain. I see it says 13 points. That's a landslide last time I checked. So this is a cautionary tale. You go for the establishment candidate, Hillary Clinton. The base dislikes her so much that many are going to sit out. But then also there are apparently some more conservative Democrats who would say, no, just to be anti-establishment here, I'd vote for Trump. Oh, goodness. Don't let Hillary Clinton get through the primary. Don't do it. It's a disaster waiting to happen. And you know how you know she's a weak candidate? Because the establishment is convinced she's the strongest candidate. So, you know, turn on mainstream media, all you hear, wall-to-wall Hillary on the Democratic side. Obviously, it's wall-to-wall Trump on the Republican side. But for the Democratic Party specifically, you have, you know, the pundits saying, well, come on, are we really having this conversation about Bernie Sanders? I mean, he's too populist, and the people like him too much for him to win. What? So, but last time around, there's a reason I say this, too. Last time around, in 2008, the media was convinced. Barack Hussein Obama, a black guy who's a Democrat who has no experience? No way he's going to do better than Hillary. Hillary's the behemoth. She's going to win everything. She's going to be president. Didn't even get through the primary. Obama beat her in the primary, obviously. So they just assume shit. In the mainstream, they just assert shit. Hillary wins! End of conversation. Let's move along. But no, if you look at the actual numbers and you look at the evidence, the data, you find out that 20% of Democratic voters would flee and perhaps go to vote for Donald Trump if Hillary is the one that gets the nomination on the Democratic side. So, reason number 9,476 to vote for Bernie Sanders over Hillary Clinton. Now, more bad news for the Democratic Party. We have some bad news for the Democratic Party to report to you guys today. The International Business Times says, quote, "The share of Democratic voters in the United States is at its smallest level in nearly 30 years. According to a Gallup poll published Monday, in 2015, 42% of voters identified as independents. That's a large number there. 29% as Democrats and 26% as Republicans." So they go on to explain further here. "Democrats haven't had such little support since 1988 when the polling institution began interviewing people on the phone about their political affiliations. But in data collected in person from 1951 to 1987, a minimum of at least 37% of Americans always identified as Democrats." Now, you may look at this and think, yeah, but wait a second, the Republicans have the lower number, even fewer people identify as Republicans. That's actually been true for a very long time. So the people who just outwardly say, yes, I am a Republican, that's always been lower than Democrats. But the point is here, the Democrats, on average, have had 37% of Americans who say, yes, I identify as a Democrat. Now that's dropped to 29%. So we're far below the average, and now it's been dropping for a while. So why is that, is the next logical question. Well, you know, you could argue on the Republican side that they've always had a lower, number of people willing to identify with them, very simply because of their policies. Because people look at the stuff that they push for and what they represent, and fewer people are into that. And if you go by other polling data, that indeed is true. Now, with the Democrats, if you go by other polling data, you find out that the American people actually agree with them on the overwhelming majority of the issues, whether it's minimum wage or taxing the rich or Social Security or education spending or foreign policy. People align more with the Democratic Party in America, for sure, ideologically. They are more liberal. So if you have people who agree with you ideologically, then why are you getting less and less popular? Well, you know, my idea, and I would put forth to you guys that the reason behind that is the Democratic Party, on top of being corrupt, just like the Republicans, they've also lost their way in terms of policy and in terms of messaging. And you don't have a political party that's open to Bernie Sanders and his philosophy. You have a political party that's much more in line with Hillary Clinton and her philosophy. The Democratic Party, from Bill Clinton and on, so the 90s and on, they've done this grand plan in their mind of, we're going to be the adult party, we're going to be the centrist party. We're going to have Bill Clinton run as a new Democrat. And his argument was, triangulation. So instead of me being a liberal or me being a progressive and doubling down on that and saying, this is what I stand for, I'm going to be above the fray, and I'm going to be mature, and I'm going to say, sometimes I agree with the Republicans, sometimes I agree with the Democrats, and you guys should vote for me as a result of that. Now, to be fair to them, at the time, that actually made sense, because we were just coming off of the Reagan Revolution. We were just coming off of Reagan having two terms and H.W. Bush having a term, and the Democrats were lost in the wilderness. They didn't know if they were going to fucking win a presidential race ever again, because it appeared like the American people kept voting for Republicans on a national level because they did. And the Democrats didn't know what to do, so they ran away from what was viewed as the hippie, far-left, free love and drugs movement, you know, that you saw in the 70s, for example. And they said, no, we got to get away from – we're viewed as the immature party. We're viewed as the party of these crazy outsiders when Reagan represented the suit and button down and, I'm a normal person. I go to work and I'm for the American people. So at the time, this new Democrat model, this triangulation made sense. And obviously, you can see, because Bill Clinton won. But then what people always forget to take into account, what the Democratic strategists forget to take into account, is that it ain't 1992 anymore, bitch. Okay, so we had George W. Bush come into power. George W. Bush, a neoconservative, a far right winger in virtually every aspect. And he destroyed the country. He destroyed the economy. Our foreign policy was a mess. We invaded people that didn't attack us. We spent trillions of dollars and put it on the credit card. It was a disaster through and through. So people looked at George W. Bush and they said, anything but that, anything but the far right, anything but Republicans and neoconservatives. And then you could argue that that's in part why Obama won, because they would vote for any Democrat over any Republican at that time in history. We were so tired of what the Republicans had done to the country that any Democrat would have won. But instead of going for a Bernie Sanders-type character in 2008, instead of going for a true progressive, what we did is we settled for this center-lefty kind of character at the time, President Obama, Barack Obama at the time, Senator Obama. And then, obviously, in office, he governed more center. I'm being kind by not saying center right here. And, you know, he did tweaks around the edges here and there, made the system a little better, but the core problems are still there. The corruption is still there. Military-industrial complex is still there, so on and so forth. And this is a long way of me explaining, coming to today, that the party is still in the mold of Bill Clinton's New Democrat concept and a centrist model, a centrist corporatist model. That's Bill Clinton, that's President Obama, that's Hillary Clinton, and the rest of the party, the overwhelming majority of the senators, and probably a majority of the Democrats in the House too, because the Progressive Caucus is small, they're of that model. And what do those people say every election season? To win the election, run to the right. To win the election, be more conservative. To win the election, no, don't be unapologetic, and don't say, I'm a liberal, I'm a progressive, here's what I'm in favor of, universal education, universal health care, getting out of the wars, so on and so forth. No, 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 always say, well, I kind of agree with the Republicans on this and that, and vote for me, and we're a nicer version of them. And then what happens? The Democrats keep getting their clocks cleaned in the past few elections as a result of that. And I say as a result of that because we know that's the case, because every single center-right Democrat that was run in the last election got their ass handed to them. Whereas, who ended up winning? Alan Grayson, a true liberal who doubles down all the time. He won by double digits in an election where virtually every other Democrat got destroyed. So Mitch McConnell, when Mitch McConnell wins in a landslide, when you know something's wrong with your party because he wasn't popular. They ran Alison Lundergan Grimes, who's a center-right Democrat, the Bill Clinton model, the centrist corporatist model, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, that's their mold. So scared to double down on being a liberal that she wouldn't even say she voted for a Democrat in the last election. She was like, did I vote for Obama? I don't think that's for anybody else to ask. You fucking sad, pathetic child. So you wonder why people are running away from the Democratic Party. Because the Democratic Party is running away from the Democratic Party. FDR would laugh at this Democratic Party. He would scold this Democratic Party. This ain't the party of the New Deal. The New Deal, hey, let's do infrastructure spending, let's do jobs for people, let's actually stand up for social safety net programs and look out for the people. Where's that Democratic Party now? I don't fucking see it. I see us doing free market reform when it comes to health care and when it comes to everything. So the problem is the Democratic Party doesn't look like the old Democratic Party. The Democratic Party, it does not double down. They're not strong. They're not liberal. They're not progressive. They're Republican light, and then they turn around and wonder why now their numbers of people who identify with them, it's dropping down to the same number as the Republicans. Well, you have your answer right here. Okay, more. Oh, God, are we breaking out Trump already? I believe we are. I believe we are. Oh, actually, I don't even know that I had a clip for this. This makes it all the better. Okay, here we go. Donald Trump did a rally in Iowa, and during the rally, he made this ludicrous comment about the dictator of North Korea, Kim Jong-un.
You look at North Korea, this guy, he's like a maniac, okay? And you got to give him credit. How many young guys, he was like 26 or 25 when his father died, take over these tough generals, and all of a sudden, you know, it's pretty amazing when you think of it. How does he do that? Even though it is a culture and it's a cultural thing, he goes in, he takes over, and he's the boss. It's incredible. He wiped out the uncle. He wiped out this one, that one. I mean, this guy doesn't play games.
Who says that? No, who says that? In a positive context. He's like, yeah, he's a boss. You know what he did? He came in there, he took it over, he wiped out this guy, wiped out the uncle, wiped out that guy. No, when you say that part, it should be in a scornful context. You should be like, unbelievable, this is a crime, we shouldn't allow this, this is unacceptable, this violates international law. Only Donald Trump would say, quote, you have to give him credit. No, I don't. Neither do you. You don't have to give him credit either. What do you mean give him credit? Give him credit because his dad had him, so he's a member of the Good Sperm Club, kind of like Donald Trump, by the way. And then he inherits a fucking country, and he continues doing hard labor camps, conditions that have been compared by the UN and others to Nazi concentration camps where people eat rats to stay alive, and you have widespread abuse and rape and all these issues. So he inherits the country. He continues all the grotesque things that his father was doing. He goes even further by assassinating members of his own family because they dare to question his power. And Trump says, quote, you have to give him credit. No, you don't have to give him credit. What I take away from that is the opposite. I give him the opposite of credit. I give him scorn. I look upon him as a clown on the world stage, as a dangerous imbecile who's in power and controls a country, and as others have rightly pointed out, you've made it so that North Korea is basically a hostage crisis. You have the worst imaginable situation. Have you seen a map at night of South Korea versus North Korea? You know what the difference is? South Korea, you see lights all over the place. Why? They have electricity. They're modern. You look at North Korea, pitch black. Pitch black. Why? Because they haven't even modernized to that point yet. They can barely feed their people. In fact, they don't feed their people. Sometimes people starve in North Korea. They have state propaganda that they pump out all the time. It was this case for Kim Il-sung and Kim Jong-il and now Kim Jong-un, where they say things like, Kim Jong-un has never defecated. He's never taken a shit in his life because he's that pure. Deify the great leader! They say he solved a Rubik's Cube in like under a minute or something like that. For his father, the first time he played golf, he had 11 holes in one. Not possible, but you basically have it so that they've set up a country that's like an experiment in giving somebody absolute power. And what's Trump's takeaway from that? Oh, that's give the guy credit. He's a boss. He's a leader. He's so much of a leader that he assassinated his uncle. What are you going to do? What this shows you is Trump, deep down, what Trump is, and it's not even just deep down, he lets it show often, but Trump is, at his core, authoritarian as well. Because to have the words come out of your mouth, well, look, give him credit. That means that on some level, you see the position he's in and how he got it and all that stuff, and you go, well, you sympathize with the guy. What, he had to take absolute control and power? No, he didn't. He could have went in the other direction and tried to modernize and tried to open up to the rest of the world and step down from being a dictator. But Trump looks at that, he's like, well, you got to give him credit because he's the absolute leader and he consolidated power even more. And yeah, he controls everything and he did it at a young age, so you got to give him credit. No, I don't give him credit because that's a bad thing. That's an immoral thing. That's the wrong thing to do. But of course, you know, when you look at a guy like Donald Trump, you see in his own, the way he acts himself, that he has imperial ambitions. He has authoritarian ambitions. He's told you on multiple occasions, hey, if I'm in control, I do what I want. Nobody tells me anything. You think that Trump would stay within the guidelines of the Constitution if he was elected? You think he understands checks and balances? You think he understands the judicial branch, the legislative branch, the executive branch, how it works? There's no way he does. He doesn't care, and he would skirt the law and the Constitution whenever he wants And then he'd pat himself on the back and say, well, you got to give me credit. I consolidated more power like a good leader. That's not what makes a good leader. What makes a good leader is somebody who follows the law, the Constitution, international law, and they do what they can for the people within the process we've set up. But instead, on some level, he looks at what's happening in North Korea as like absolute power. Isn't that great? What a boss. What a leader. Quote, you have to give him credit. Okay. Take a break, guys. When we come back, the Associated Press is reporting that the Supreme Court heard a case on unions, and it didn't go well, if you like unions. And then later on, a KKK guy who committed murder is asking for forgiveness. And wait until you hear his argument as to why you should let him out on parole. It's tremendous. All right, stay right there, guys. We'll be right back.
Friends. of a bitch. Welcome back to the show.
And now I'm going to get all wonky on you and tell you exactly what's happening with the assault on unions in this country. The Associated Press is reporting that the Supreme Court heard a case on unions, and they look like they're going to deal a significant blow to them. Now, for a long time now, private sector unions have been under attack. I would say that attack has been successful. We used to have many more people in private sector unions, and then the business class, the elite, wanted to fight back against that because they don't want to pay people high wages and give them good health care and good benefits and all that stuff. So now private sector unions are at a historic low, but public sector has actually, for the most part, avoided this war against them, or you could say to a certain extent won this war against them. Public sector unions have been stronger than private sector unions for decades now, but that might all change. So here's what they say. Quote, the conservative justices seemed inclined during 80 minutes of oral argument to overrule a four-decade-old precedent that allows public unions to collect fair share fees from non-members to help cover the costs of collective bargaining. A group of California public school teachers claims those mandatory fees violate the First Amendment rights of workers who disagree with the union's positions. Labor officials fear that union members will leave in droves if they realize they can get all the benefits of representation without paying for it. For decades, the growth of union workers in government has helped compensate for steep losses in manufacturing, constructions, and other private industries where unions once thrived. About half of all union members are now in the public sector, which has a membership rate of 36%. That's more than five times higher than that of the private sector at just 6.6%. Okay, so understand exactly what's happening here. The way it works for these public sector unions, and specifically in this case we're talking about in California and we're talking about the teachers union, is everybody pays union dues, whether you're a member of the union or not, and then when the union negotiates on behalf of union members, indeed everybody gets the benefits of that. People who are union members and non-union members who are paying their fair share fees, because, for example, if you negotiate X amount of vacation time. I don't happen to know exactly how much vacation time that they get, but they get summer vacations at least. So you negotiate a certain amount of time off, and then it's not just the union members who get that time off. It's also the non-union members. And this happens with a variety of different benefits and positive things that the workers get, the teachers get, that the union negotiates for them. So quite reasonably, the unions have said, well, okay, if you get into this field, it's just par for the course that even if you're a non-member of the union, you're going to pay your fair share dues so that you're not a freeloader, so that you're not paying nothing and then still reaping the benefits of what the union has negotiated for you. So very simply, they're right to say if you get rid of this requirement of non-member dues, so your fair share pay, if you get rid of that, what do you think is going to happen? What's going to happen is all these people who are in the union are going to say, well, why would I stay in the union if I could get out of it, not pay my dues, and then still have the union negotiate on my behalf? Then I'd save money in two ways, where I wouldn't be paying any money. I wouldn't be paying any dues, so I get to keep that money. And then also whatever positive things they negotiate for me, more vacation time, better benefits, whatever, I'm going to get that too. So people are going to decide, hey, I'm going to freeload now. But what's the problem with that? That can only last for so long because eventually the unions are going to close up shop and stop doing what they're doing because they can't – if everybody leaves the union and nobody pays their dues, well, then how the fuck are they going to keep everything running? They're not going to be able to. So this is a very, very clever and sneaky trick that the right is doing, where the argument they're making is, well, hold on here. All these non-union members who are paying their fair share dues, well, this violates their free speech rights because perhaps they don't agree with the union on everything that the union stands for, and they don't agree with the politicians that the unions may donate to, so you're therefore violating their free expression rights, free speech rights, and they shouldn't have to pay their fair share dues. Man, that's a clever fucking argument. Now, the reality is, the way this should be handled is, it's actually a middle ground, where you say, okay, you don't want to pay your fair share dues, even though you're reaping the benefits of what the union does, even if you don't pay to them. Well, then very simply, what I would say is, well, then let them have to deal with the not having the protections of the union. So, you know, if you're part of the union and they happen to negotiate more time off, better benefits, or higher pay or whatever, well, then, okay, you're not in the union. You're not going to get that raise. You're not going to get those other benefits. You're not going to get that extra time off. Look, you didn't want to pay your fair share dues. So what do you want me to do? I'm not going to help you if you're not paying and being part of the union. Why would I help you? You're not in the union. What do you mean? So that's what should really happen. Okay, so, sure, you don't want to pay anything even though you're benefiting from it? Well, then don't benefit from it. There should be a separate class set up of non-union teachers and let them fucking free-for-all for them. And they will get lower pay and they will get worse benefits. And then many of them, under that scenario, would end up running back to the union. But the way the Supreme Court is trying to set it up right now is, and remember, this is a conservative Supreme Court, so it's hilarious, that the way it looks like they're going to rule is on the side of the freeloaders. They're going to say, no, okay, yeah, you get to not pay your fair share dues and still benefit from what the union negotiates. Oh, that's horrible. Because then, believe you me, it's a matter of time until these particular unions collapse because they don't have any money to run themselves, and everybody's going to get out while still reaping the benefits of the union for a short amount of time. And then, obviously, after that happens, after the collapse of the unions, you will have a drastic decline in wages, and you'll have a decline in benefits, and you'll have just worse packages and worse deals for the teachers. And then all these idiots who wanted to save a little bit of money up front, they're going to realize that was a fucking mistake. I didn't even realize the union was doing a lot for me. They were doing a lot for me. So this doesn't look good, man. It's a clever argument that the right came up with in order to push their case here. It's an argument that looks like it's swaying the conservative justices and they're a majority on the court. So it may just be a matter of time until we get this death blow to the public sector unions. Now, the private sector unions, they've already lost their war. They're down to 6.6% of the private sector. But the public sector unions, 36% public sector workers are in a union. That number is going to decrease if this case goes the wrong way. Okay. Now I'm going to bitch and moan about something that's pissed me off for a while. Kind of the whole point of this show, I guess, isn't it? Yeah, I guess we could say that. According to The Hill, the Reagan-era economist Art Laffer is predicting that Republicans will win 47 states in the upcoming presidential election. Now, for those of you who don't know what that means, it's basically impossible. There are 50 states in the U.S. as of right now. Some of them are solidly Democratic. Some of them are solidly Republican as well. But this guy's saying 47 states are going to go to the Republican in the next presidential election. Where did he get this from? His anus. That's where he got it from. Raw Story explains. A conservative economist noted for providing the basis for the supply-side theory of economics that became the hallmark of the Reagan administration, predicted that the GOP may be looking at a landslide win come the November elections. Here's the quote. I would be surprised if the Republicans don't take 45, 46, 47 states out of the 50, regardless of whom the GOP picks as their nominee. I mean, I think we're going to landslide this election. When I look at these candidates, I don't see one of them. I don't see one of them who wouldn't do a great job as president. I think Hillary's a very impressive person. She's very articulate, very well educated, got a great resume and all that. But her policies are not good, and it's about issues, not about people. And her day has gone. oh my God, that's precious in so many ways. Now, I'm no fan of Hillary Clinton, but here's whose policies are better than all the Republican policies. Hillary Clinton. As much as I dislike Hillary Clinton, the only person on the Republican side I would even consider over her, if it were to come down to her versus somebody on the Republican side, would probably be Rand Paul. And even that one may not be as close as it once was in my mind. So I got many problems with Hillary, and believe me, they're deep problems. But the idea that, well, I mean, come on. Rick Santorum beats Hillary Clinton on substance. What planet are you living on? This guy really believes the Republicans are substantive. Have you seen the debates? The debates are a shit show. It's basically Donald Trump reality TV berating minority communities and saying ridiculous things and flip-flopping nonstop. He's like, substance. The Republicans are substantive. He said 45, 46, or 47 of the states, no matter who the Republican nominee is. Really? Mike Huckabee versus Bernie Sanders, that's going to go 46, 47 states to Mike Huckabee? Oh my God, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. The whole point of me doing this segment. Art Laffer and other Republican pundits, commentators, economists, politicians, you name it. They've been wrong about everything. 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 His economic theory has been debunked repeatedly. Every time we've done what this guy likes, it's been disastrous consequences. We did it under the Reagan administration. What happened? Ballooning deficits, ballooning debt, and then we had a recession the second Reagan left office. It was a boom-bust cycle. Why? Because this is the jackass who says, deregulate everything, cut taxes for the rich, and then watch revenue flow into the government and the economy will roar free and we'll have endless growth. But wait, every time we did that, what happens? Boom-bust cycles. The economy takes off temporarily and then it crashes. Why? Because you didn't regulate it. It's not real growth. It's basically monopoly money. And that's not a long-term strategy. That's not a long-term solution. And the idea that you cut taxes but increase revenue, that just makes no sense at face value. So you're going to cut taxes. That means you're cutting revenue to the government, but that's going to increase revenue. Cutting revenue is going to increase revenue. No, but that's stupid. That's not true. We know it's not true. That doesn't happen. It's a contradiction. How do you not see that? Because you know what they argue, right? If you cut taxes for the rich, the economy will take off so much that even though you're taxing at a lower rate, it's going to be a net increase in money, in capital flow, revenue flow to the government, because there will be so much more money that everybody will be making that whatever, 18% is more from the amount of money made compared to if it was a higher rate and you're earning less. But that doesn't come true. When we try it, it doesn't happen. But nonetheless, this guy's still respected. And that's the point of doing this segment. Is anybody going to come back when this guy's wrong and say, hey, Art, pack it up. You're done. Your career's over. That was such a bad prediction. We can't trust anything you have to say. Nobody's going to do that. I guarantee you this guy and his fat face is still going to be showing up on Fox Business Network, Fox News, and he's still going to be viewed as an expert, an economist, even though all of his predictions have been wrong from day fucking one. And we see it time and time and time again. If anybody on the left made this bad of a prediction, their job's gone. If anybody on the left does anything wrong, look at Bill O'Reilly versus Brian Williams. Brian Williams lied about personal shit, suspended, and then demoted. Bill O'Reilly lied way more about way more serious stuff. Not even a slap on the wrist. Nothing. Nothing. Different standard for the right and the left. The left, if you get something wrong, you're done. We're dismissing you. It's over. The right, you can be dead wrong about everything every time you open your mouth, and there's no consequences. So, for example, Glenn Beck predicted a landslide victory for Mitt Romney. By no data, there were no polling agencies. Out of 27, I think it was all but two said that Obama was going to win pretty handily. All but two. And then what? What happened? He still went out there, still predicted Mitt Romney was going to win in a landslide, and then he was dead wrong. No consequences. Rush Limbaugh, same thing. Predicted Mitt Romney was going to win in a landslide. George Will, who's viewed as an intellectual of the right, predicted Romney was going to win in a landslide. Dead wrong. there were, out of 27 polling agencies, all but about two said Obama was going to win by a decent amount. So there was no factual basis to make that prediction, but they made it, and then when they were wrong, no consequences. Larry Kudlow said that, and this guy's a CNBC host, he said that Romney would win with, I think it was over 320 electoral votes. Now, not only is this guy still on the air, still wrong about everything he's ever said, he's even considering running for Senate now. And if he were to run for Senate, he'd have a good chance at winning. Why? All of his buddies in big business will give him tremendous amounts of money, so he'd probably win. There are no consequences for the right. There are none. You can be wrong about everything, objectively, empirically, factually. It's irrelevant. They don't care about facts on the right. Instead, they get to say this, and nobody holds them accountable, which is pathetic because the whole job of the media is to fact-check, is to give information. And if they were doing their job, it would be nonstop fact-checks of the right, and you'd be able to dismiss them based on that. But you can't do that because, oh, God forbid, they might say you have a liberal bias. Well, if that's where the facts are, then there should be a liberal bias, because in reality, it's not a liberal bias. It's a bias towards the facts, which is indeed not a bias at all. Okay. Let me do one more, and then we'll take a break. More on the KKK here. I feel like we've been talking about them a lot. Russell Hinson is a former KKK leader known as the Exalted Cyclops. And this guy is a class act who killed a 16-year-old black girl with a crossbow. The crime was committed in 1992. He was convicted of first-degree murder. Raw Story says, quote, Hinson was reportedly upset that he had been ripped off by a black drug dealer and wanted to take revenge on the black community. I'm going to shoot a N-word through the heart, he told a friend. Well, this guy is now up for parole, and he told the Charlotte Observer that he found God in prison, and he has black friends now. So it's all good. Let him go. Give him parole. I'm serious. This is what he said. He said, I have black friends, and I found God, so it's all good. Quote, there's no hatred there anymore. We just have to learn to forgive. Now he's talking about forgiveness. Yeah, okay, so here's the deal. No. You're going to stay in jail forever, as you should. You shouldn't be released on parole. I don't believe you. It's a classic go-to move that people do. And I don't know why anybody would fall for this or why they think it's clever and why they think it's something that, you know, deserves to get them a pat on the back from society. This whole come-to-God shit, like, well, I know what I did was wrong, but I found God. Why is that? First of all, you were a KKK guy. They already deeply believe in God. The KKK is a Christian organization. You know what they're burning on the lawn, right? It's a cross. They can cite to you Bible verses that back up their racism and their bigotry and their intolerance. They're already super Christian. But you're going to tell me, okay, well, now I believe in a more benign interpretation of God, and I found God, but not the vengeful, bigoted, intolerant, genocidal God. Now I believe in the more loving, pacifist, Jesus-y, and the New Testament, in most cases, God. Okay, I still don't know why. Okay, now we're supposed to go, well, he found God, let him go. No, why doesn't it ever work the other way? According to polling data, atheists, more than anybody else, actually believe more in the message of Jesus. They're way more liberal on average than almost any other group. So if that's the case, that means that if you deconvert, chances are you've become a more open-minded, tolerant person who's more liberal on the different political issues. So why hasn't anybody ever said, look, I know I did some bad things in the past, but that was when I was drunk on God Kool-Aid, and I was a fundamentalist. I believed in a strict interpretation of Yahweh, or I believed in Allah, or I believed in whatever. But now I've grown up. I've matured. I don't believe anymore. I deconverted. So let me out. Would anybody go, well, I mean, look, he doesn't believe anymore. Let him go. He doesn't believe anymore. Atheists are by and large more open-minded and liberal. Let him go. No, nobody would do that. They only do the come to God moment because this is something that society wrongly has a bias towards. People view atheists, even though this is not true, they view it as, you know, linked up with immorality. If you say, I'm an atheist, people hear, I am immoral. I don't believe in right and wrong. That's what they hear. And so anybody who says, God, it's like, yeah, so what? No, God. Yeah, but the overwhelming majority of people believe in God. That doesn't necessarily mean they're good, they're bad, whatever. You could be super fundamentalist, like I said, with the KKK, or you could be like Martin Luther King Jr., right? But just God, let me go. God, God, God. Hello, I said God. I have black friends and God. Are you with me? Let me go. Please, please, please. No, I don't care about your little semantic games. I don't care about your tricks. I don't care about the black friends you have. Congratulations for finally coming around to a position that's a position that all rational people had when they were age two. I don't care about your come to God moment. I don't care about I have black friends now. I don't care about, hey, forgiveness, forgiveness. What you did was bad enough. What you did, there's punishment based on your actions. The sentence was, you get to go in jail forever. They'll consider parole, but I hope they reject it. But that's not enough for me. If you did these things and you're the grand cyclops, grand wizard, dragon, Harry Potter, Quidditch, fucking asshole, McGee's axe, whatever, I don't give a shit. Stay in jail where you belong. And these shitty arguments shouldn't work on anybody. Okay. All right, we're going to take a break here. And then when we come back, there's a Virginia pastor who's now my favorite pastor in the world, and you'll see why when we come back, who's going to do an insane rant about abortion and gay people and guns, and he just mixes up every right-wing talking point you've ever heard in your entire life in a glorious mix, a glorious stew of insanity and stupidity. And he also has the most obvious wig I've ever seen in my life. And he's the Get Her Done pastor. You'll know why in a minute. Well, not in a minute, but you know what I mean when I do the story. And then also when we come back, I got Ben Carson, I got Rick Santorum. They're going to make the saddest and dumbest arguments I've ever heard against gay people and gay marriage. I can't believe they're still stuck on this. Actually, scratch that. I absolutely can believe they're still stuck on this. This was their whole shtick to begin with. Their whole thing was like, fuck gay people suck, isn't fundamentalist religion awesome, vote for me, and I will continue to be bigoted. They're really letting that all hang out before the Iowa caucus here. So we'll talk about all that stuff. And we have some creepy new laws, man. A creepy new law in North Carolina involving abortion. You don't want to miss that story. You know those trap laws that we always talk about, targeted restriction of abortion procedure laws? Now they're diving in and they're getting the Orwell status. When I tell you this new one that they're doing and what it requires people to do if they want an abortion, unbelievable. And then also, I tried to get to this story on Friday. I didn't have enough time. But there's some so-called surprising new study. Findings and study together. I was going to say studdings. Professional speaker, get at me. There are some fantastic or so-called hard-to-believe new findings that have shocked researchers about sexuality. And I'm here to tell you, you shouldn't be fucking surprised by it. In fact, I'm surprised that they're surprised by the findings. It has to do with what percentage of people are straight, what percentage of people are bi or gay, and the numbers, they're creeping up, but their conclusion based on that is kind of ridiculous, to be honest. So we'll talk about that and much more. Stay right there, guys. We'll be right back. Blog Talk Radio, Secular Talk Radio, Kyle Klinsky Show.
Son of a bitch. All right, we're back, guys. Let's get to one of my favorite stories of the day here. I think you're all going to get a kick out of this one. There's a Virginia pastor named Jim Hill, who's now my favorite pastor in the world. He has a show called What Does the Bible Plainly Say? And he did a pro-life rant last week that somehow morphed into a pro-gun rant. See if you can spot the contradiction there. Let's listen.
If you've got a good marriage, you can't buy that. You can't order that. You can't recover that. Don't let it get away. God ordained male and female, not male and male and female and female. He said Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. You know, I have, this past week, I have rejoiced with some people because they had a new baby. You know, it always was that we were happy when a new baby came along. But it seems like anymore, the first thing they want to do is kill them. First thing they want to do is bash their brains out, cut their throat, chop them up like chopped liver or chickens, sell the parts. First thing you know, they'll start selling everything but the crime, and they'll find a way for that. 50 million babies have been killed and thrown in the garbage can and sold. Shame, shame, shame. Something else. There's a big issue over guns right now. Take away their guns. You know, that's what Hitler did to Poland and Hungary and all those countries when he took them over. Hang on to yours. Hang on to yours. Hang on to it. That's the only protection you have against the government, against tyranny, against murderers and thieves and rapists and whoremongers that want to storm in, take over your property, take over your family, kill your wife. Stand up. Where do we go from here? Let's forget the past. Let's go forward. Let's get her done. Okay? Let's get it done. Let's get alive. Grow up. Get it. Got it. Good.
I don't know what my favorite part of that was. I like the closing music, like the uber patriotic Trump is playing, and he's all proud and get her done. What's it, get her done? Isn't that the fucking weird blue collar comedy guy, comedian? I forget his name. Don't hold me. Larry the Cable Guy. Isn't that that guy's thing? Get her done. I love America. All right. If you love America, I'm going to need you to go ahead and not wear that wig anymore. That is the most obvious wig I've ever seen in my life. You can see that video was nowhere near high def, and you could see from a mile away. Dude, it looks like you're wearing part of a mop on your head. Oh, God, that was so weird. The entire thing was just one giant contradiction. He starts out, Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve! Okay, that's a point that I make in a mocking way. Like, I don't even provide a counter-argument to that, because just saying that makes otherwise intelligent people go, yeah, that's ridiculous. That makes other Christians go, God, I don't want to be on the side of that guy. Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve! But he goes from that to abortion being bad. I'm pro-life, 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 pro-life. And then there's an immediate transition to, they're coming for your guns, keep your guns. You have to fight people off. But wait, you were just saying pro-life, and now you're pro-gun. Doesn't really add up there, buddy. Kind of a little bit of a contradiction. And the name of the show is, What Does the Bible Plainly Say? I'll tell you what the New Testament, and what Jesus clearly says in the New Testament, it's pacifism. Turn the other cheek. They hit you on one cheek, you show them the other and say, hit this one too. Self-defense. I'm not going to do self-defense. I'm going to do pacifism. Whatever you can do against me, go ahead. If you want to twist my arm, twist further. Break it. This is what pacifism is. It doesn't even allow for fighting in self-defense. That's Jesus' core message. He's like, no, the guns. Hitler going to take them. Oh, our country's under attack. Let me keep the guns. Let me keep the guns. I'm pro-life. They try to have their cake and eat it too. And furthermore, when he says, when the name of the show is What Does the Bible Plainly Say, he gets it wrong on abortion too. We've spoken about that before. There are parts in the Bible where they say if your wife cheats on you, she should get an abortion. The idea is you give her bitter water, as they call it, which is this potion where she drinks it, and if she miscarries, that's good because that means that the miscarriage is a result of, or the abortion is a result of that being the fetus of the person she cheated with and not yours. But if she drinks it and it's okay, well then great, that means that it's yours and then everything's hunky-dory. But the message is clear. Have an abortion if your wife cheats. What does the Bible plainly say? I don't know because I ain't read it. And then, just finally here real quick. Where does the line about whoremongers come from? He's ranting about all these things. The whoremonger is going to kill your wife. I have no idea what that means. What does that mean? What whoremongers? There are whoremongers who are marauding gangs? What are you saying? And then, he doesn't even, like, I know, we shouldn't even waste time debunking the dumbest of the dumbest arguments, but I always feel compelled to when we're covering stories like this. The point of, 50 million babies have been killed. Hey, jackass, late-term abortion is already illegal in the United States. The only time it's okay is in cases of rape and incest and if the life of the mother is in danger or if the fetus isn't going to make it anyway, so you need to abort. You have no choice. It's the only time ever. 98% of abortions happen before 20 weeks, which means you're dealing with zygotes and embryos and gametes and pregestation fetuses. You're not dealing with, you know, a developed fetus that has a nervous system and can feel pain. That's not the case. So when you say you're killing 50 million babies, that's totally not true. And what they always try to do is they try to link it to genocide to make you feel like, oh, we have to put a stop to this, but that's incorrect, and it's wildly misleading. And needless to say, you shouldn't think that this guy is actually on the side of life, because if he was, perhaps he wouldn't be in favor of gun anarchy, which we know in the U.S. leads to 32,000 deaths on average every single year. So, Virginia Pastor Jim Hill, it was an interesting and hilarious segment, but I'm going to need you to stop making an ass of yourself. Okay, now, let's move along to Ben Carson. Ben Carson's campaign for president hit a rough patch, so he's been going on all of these no-name religious shows and making an ass of himself. Here he is discussing gay rights.
What is your stance, for example, on right to speech? You know, as a minister, it's almost like I feel an undercurrent coming more and more that if you speak the truth in love about a true conviction of Scripture, it's a matter of time, it seems like, before you will be labeled with hate speech.
Right.
For standing, for example, for a marriage being between a man and a woman.
Absolutely. You know, the way it works now is they target you, and they have all kind of hate speech, ridicule. If there's a way that they can bring action against you, they will do that, try to ruin your life. Look at all the people, you know, who, because of their religious convictions and their belief in what the Bible says, have lost their livelihood.
Yes,
they've been put in jeopardy over the gay marriage issue.
Right.
When in fact, this is supposed to be a country where you live and let live.
Oh, that's adorable. He's saying live and let live, but only when it comes to me and people like me, not when it comes to gays. Gays can't live and let live, but live and let live when it's me and whatever I want to do. And even if I want to take away your rights, well, live and let live. Let me take away your rights. But that's not live and let live. Live and let live includes gay people. Forgot that part, didn't you? So look at the way that that conversation evolved. This is, you know, far right 101. They start out with, you know, let's talk about how the right to free speech is something that can never be taken away under any circumstances, and we're free speech absolutists. Let's talk about that. And then that gradually became, we have the right to take away the rights of gay people. Okay, but then that's not about free speech anymore. And you talk about free speech, but what you really mean is right to say the shit I say without you responding. Because that's what they're mad about. They're mad that LGBT activists and liberals call out their bullshit on gay rights. Where we say, no, you're empirically wrong. Your position is for inequality. Your position is for injustice. We're against it. And see, he wants to take away your right to say that. So when he says free speech, he means just for me. Let me say anti-gay stuff all day long. You can't respond. And oh yeah, by the way, also, we're going to not allow gays to get married as we whine about how our constitutional rights are under attack. What about the rights of gay people? See, as they are doing the oppressing, they're trying to say, we're oppressed. We're so oppressed, you have no idea, we're so oppressed. No. Live and let live applies to everybody, including gay people. When we talk about equal protection under the law, that means that gays have a right to get married like anybody else. That's the way it works now. But what it really comes down to is what? They don't give a shit about that. What they care about is the Bible. And on that issue, they want to implement what the Bible says. When it comes to poor people and rich people and Syrian refugees, no, then they don't care about what the Bible says. But on this one, they want to take biblical law and implement it and force gays to live under that, which is hilarious because, again, the whole context of the conversation was, let's talk about constitutional rights and free speech and how that can never be taken away. How did you start with that and then get to, we should force gay people and everybody to live under biblical law or our interpretation of biblical law? That is fundamentally against the Constitution, which you're pretending to care about right now. It's so sad. Ben, you're doing horrible now in the presidential race, and stuff like this is not going to help you. Okay, maybe in Iowa a little bit, New Hampshire a tad, because they're more evangelical than anybody else. But you think this is going to go over in a general election? You think this is going to go over in other primaries? But he can't help himself. He's not that bright, and he's an ideologue. He's brilliant when it comes to neurosurgery. Everything else, it's a swing and a miss. He has no clue what the American people want. He has no clue what he's doing. He might think that these arguments, oh, this is really going to work, this one. Let me talk about how gays are oppressing us, not the other way around. Okay. Cruising. Perhaps I'll end a few minutes early today. I still have a lot of stuff left, but I still think I might end early. All right, Rick Santorum. Now let's go to this jackass. Rick Santorum is going to make one of the saddest and dumbest arguments I've ever heard here against gay marriage. Let's listen.
Ted Cruz, a couple of days ago, came out and said, hey, don't split the conservative vote and let the moderate through the middle like we've done before. So you rightly point out you've been down this road before. Is he looking at some internal polling, do you think, that's had him a little bit worried, maybe?
Well, all I can say is that when you start using reasons other than I'm the best candidate to vote for me, then there might be some chinks in the armor.
Uh-huh.
And look, I'm very proud of the conservative record I put together. There's no one that's fought more on moral and cultural issues. I'm not a libertarian. Now, there are people in this race that want the states to decide whether there should be same-sex marriage or polygamy or marijuana use. I don't believe that. I don't mm-hmm. believe that the states have the right to redefine something that is not capable of redefining. It's, for me, when you say the states have the right to define marriage, it's like saying, well, the states have the right to redefine the chemical equation for water. It can be H3O instead of H2O.
Rick, one of those things is chemistry. It's a part of physical law. The other one is social convention, which is 100% changeable if we choose to change it. Oh, that's so sad. That's the weakest argument I've ever heard on this issue. And Rick, I hate to tell you, the original form of marriage was polygamy, or actually, to be more specific, polygyny, which is one man and multiple women. So if we're using your logic here, or lack thereof, then we would say, hey, when we moved it to one man, one woman, well, we can't do that. It's like we're changing the laws of nature. It's like we're changing chemistry in order to do that. So we got to go back to the original one man, multiple women. But he wouldn't accept that, would he? Exactly. But that argument is, again, one of the worst arguments I've ever heard. How can you argue? You're seriously arguing that something that's a matter of social convention and culture and what we decide. Well, no, that's exactly the same as chemistry. It's exactly the same as literal physical laws. No, but this proves that on some level, he thinks that this is the way the world works in a broader context, which means that things are the way they are because that's how they're supposed to be. And that's really a dangerous belief, because if that's the way you think about the world, then what incentive is there to try to change things in a positive way? What incentive is there to try to move in the right direction? Because it's easy to rationalize not doing the right thing simply by saying, well, that's just how it is. Look, marriage, one man, one woman, what am I going to do? That's how it is. That's like the laws of nature. That's like chemistry. I can't change it. Okay, we'll take that logic further and apply it in other areas. I mean, what am I going to do? There's poor people in the U.S. They're poor because of who they are and how they are, and that's just how it is. That's the way nature is. There's nothing I can do to help them. Cut all the social safety net programs because that's just how they are. You can justify racism this way, too. Well, look, why do black people statistically do worse in many categories, including net worth and stuff like that? They have higher unemployment. What am I going to do? I can't help them. That's just how they are. That's just how it is. It's like written in the laws of nature. It's like chemistry. It's just a hardcore physical law. They do worse than white people. What am I going to do? I'm not going to help. That's just how it is. That's a horrible, horrible way of thinking and viewing the world. You should be able to distinguish, as intelligent people can, things that really are just hardcore biological or physical facts versus things that we absolutely can change and are more complex. In other words, in the nature versus nurture argument, Rick Santorum just made an argument that's akin to saying everything is nature. One man, one woman is just nature, because that's what I say. I'm declaring that it's unchangeable because it's nature, and that's it. That's the end of the conversation. Well, then again, you're gonna be more hesitant to try to move in a good direction, in a positive direction, in a progressive direction, in other areas, because if you're convinced everything just is how it is and that's nature, well, then you're not gonna be a very effective president now, are you? But then again, look, he's telling you, so you know what he's standing for. He's saying, I'm not a libertarian. I don't believe in small government when it comes to your social life. I believe in big government. I want to get in there and micromanage everything you do when it comes to drugs you take, whatever you put in your body, when it comes to what's happening in your bedroom. I'm against you having freedom in that regard. So I'm going to come in there, I'm going to crack down, and I'm going to be a Christian theocrat, and I'm going to base everything on my interpretation of my God, and then declare it has to be like this because this is just how it is. This is like chemistry. It's like H2O. What a profoundly unsophisticated clown this guy is, which is why in the end he's going to end up getting negative 12 votes. All right, now let's get to this fascinating story on abortion that I've been talking about for a while. Doctors in North Carolina are now required by law to send ultrasound images of women seeking an abortion to state officials. So Raw Story says, quote, anti-abortion activists say the law is intended to verify that doctors and health clinics are complying with state law, which prohibits abortions after 20 weeks, with some exceptions for medical emergencies. The law requires healthcare providers who perform abortions after the 16-week mark to send ultrasound images to North Carolina's Department of Health and Human Services so officials can verify the probable gestational age of the fetus. But critics say the law serves no medical purpose, and proponents have not offered any examples of physicians engaging in those actions the law is intended to prevent. The law also extends the waiting period for abortions to 72 hours, the nation's longest. Okay, so just so there's no confusion here, I need everybody to understand that this law, anti-abortion group. So it's not like this is doctors who have no stake in it and they're just being objective and saying this is the best way to go. No, this is an anti-abortion group that's open about that, and then they try to push for anything to try to restrict it and limit it as much as possible. And some people are saying the idea is actually to try to shame women into not getting it because, you know, hey, what do you want different government officials looking at the picture of your ultrasound? Is that what you want to do?
they've described it as Orwellian, because you have Big Brother looking at what's happening inside your body and trying to prevent you from making a decision. Now, again, 72 hours, that's how long they make you wait as well. So that's part of this bill also. And this is part of what we've discussed before, which is called a TRAP law, which stands for a Targeted Restriction of Abortion Procedure Law. I didn't make that up. Think Progress or some liberal group didn't make that up. That was made up by the people who push for the laws. So they tell you, they're like, yeah, no, targeted restriction of abortion procedure. Those are the laws we want to put forth. We want to crack down on abortion. That's our whole point. Yeah, we're letting that flag fly all day long. You like it? Great. You don't? I don't give a shit. So understand that this is not the way to go, man. And what's hilarious is that this is from the small government crowd. The small government crowd who says in every other area we get the government all far back, taxes too high, all these problems. They're like, no, I want the biggest government possible for your vagina, for your uterus. These are also the same people who push for transvaginal ultrasounds, which is insane because it's almost quite literally state-sanctioned penetration, state-sanctioned rape, where they force you, you have to look at this transvaginal ultrasound, which is unnecessary, but we're going to make you do it because maybe if you don't do it, well, then you'll just forego an abortion completely. This is the wrong way to go. And this is even coming from a guy, myself, I've said before, I'm a moderate on the issue of abortion. Sorry, guys, I'm not a progressive, I'm not even a liberal on this, I'm a moderate on this. So I actually agree with Roe versus Wade and the way the laws were crafted with that, which is very simply, you allow abortion, it's broken up into trimesters. Early trimester, no restrictions whatsoever. It's all the woman's choice, no question about it, that's it. Second one, okay, you can begin to regulate it a little bit, but not a lot. Third one, banned, illegal. Only with exceptions for rape, incest, life of the mother, and if the fetus is going to die anyway. Okay, so I agree with that. I agree with when you get to late term, yeah, don't allow it except in those rare circumstances. So they're saying that, oh, that's what this is for. But, like I just explained to you, they have no evidence. They haven't offered a single example of a physician engaging in the stuff that they're supposedly trying to stop. It's like, oh my God, it's an epidemic. You have these doctors doing late-term abortions, and that's against the law, and so we need to check it. We need to check it. In reality, none. There's been none of that, zero examples of that. So in reality, they just want Big Brother. They just want the government to look at your ultrasound to make you hesitant, to try to shame you away from getting an abortion. So it's unacceptable. It's clearly crossing a line. It crosses the line of protection from unreasonable search and seizure and, right to privacy. You don't think this is an unreasonable search? Hey, let me look at your ultrasound before you make a very, personal choice here, personal decision here. So, yet again, they've gone too far, and they're trying to find backdoor ways to ban it because the Supreme Court says you just can't ban it. And we've seen it before with you have government officials going into abortion clinics, measuring the hallways, and then saying, oh, these need to be 3 inches wider, and if you don't make them 3 inches wider, we're going to shut you down. That's another old trick they do. You need a surgical procedure room in this abortion clinic. Meanwhile, it could be an abortion clinic that only hands out the pills. They go, we don't care. You need a surgical procedure room. They're like, well, we can't afford that. They go, okay, well, then you have to shut down. So the whole point is to overregulate to get them out of business because they can't afford million-dollar renovations. And then they turn around and go, what? No, we were just trying to keep everybody safe by doing rational regulations here. No, you weren't. You were purposefully over-regulating to try to ban abortion in a backdoor way where it isn't obvious to your, regular political follower. You need to dig into the details to find out what's really going on here. That's exactly what's happening in this case, too, and it's a terrible idea. All right, and finally, let's do one more here. The Centers for Disease Control released a new study on American sexuality, and there are some findings that surprised researchers. Now, I don't think it's surprising at all, and I'm surprised that the researchers are surprised, but nonetheless, let me tell you all the details, and then you see if you agree with them and them being surprised. So they say, quote, the study sought to provide estimates about sexual behavior, sexual attraction and sexual orientation nationally among men and women between 18 and 44 years old. The CDC selected data from 9,175 adults of various demographics who participated in computer-assisted interviews. So here are the results. First of all, almost three times as many women, 17.4%, reported any same-sex contact in their lifetime compared with 6.2% of men. So let's reflect on this one here. This is a number that I'm actually a little taken aback by because they're talking specifically like same-sex contact, so actually engaging in some kind of a sex act. 17.4% of women were like, yeah, totally. And 6.2% of men were like, mm-hmm. 6.2% of men? I'm surprised by that. I am surprised by that. That's a little more than I thought would have actually engaged in the act. Okay. Now, let's go to the next one, which I'm not surprised by, but which the researchers are like, oh my goodness. They say 75.9% of women and 88.6% of men age 18 to 24 said they were attracted only to the opposite sex. Okay. So this is where the researchers are like, that's the highest level of bisexuality and homosexuality we've ever seen. So again, 75.9% of women say they're only attracted to the opposite sex, which means that, what are we talking about here? I suck at math, but 24% of women are saying, yeah, no, I am sometimes attracted to the same sex. 24%. Now, when it comes to men, it's about 11%. 11% of men say, yeah, I'm attracted to the same sex sometimes. So that's a higher rate, a higher percentage of bisexuality and homosexuality than people have ever admitted to. Okay. Now, this led the researchers to conclude, quote, there's a progression away from straightness. Now, that's where I call bullshit. Because they think, well, goodness, society is moving more towards being bisexual and being gay. No. It's just more people are opening up about it. More people are coming out of the closet, so to speak, about their bisexuality or their homosexuality. And a lot of that has to do with the political climate and the culture and society. So when we allow gay marriage and we're more open-minded and we care about gay people more and, you know, we have many public figures who are gay and, you know, they're looked upon as just another public figure, another famous person. Nobody judges them necessarily, or most good people don't judge them. Ellen DeGeneres, for example, Ellen Page, others, right? So if people see that, they see that there's more tolerance now, so they're willing to say, okay, you know what? Yeah, sometimes I'm attracted to the same sex. I'm bi, or I'm this, or I'm that. So it's not that people are moving towards that. It's that they're admitting that, okay? Now, so I'm not surprised by that aspect of it, but let me just add one thing in conclusion here. There's other studies that have came out recently which have said that everybody's bisexual on some level. Okay, that I'm totally calling bullshit on. I don't believe those studies for a second. Want to know why I say that? Me. Now, and I know I'm not the only one. I know I'm not the only one who is only and rigidly attracted to the other sex. I have no interest in men or dicks whatsoever. I'm not the only one. It's not everybody in the world but me. There are purely heterosexual people out there. So I don't know what their methodology was. I don't know what any of that stuff was. But I will be interested to see where this goes from here, in the sense that, but what percentage is it really? Because this is probably still an underrepresentation of people that are bi. On some level, are 50% of people bi? Maybe. Because it depends where on the spectrum they are. Are they, you could be majority straight, but a little bit gay. You could be in the middle of that spectrum and be 50-50 towards both sexes. Or you could be, you know, 80% gay, 20% straight, whatever. There's a scale. There's a Kinsey spectrum here. So at the end of the day, sure, these numbers I think are a more accurate reflection of what people really are. But who knows? Maybe in the future when people are even more open and honest about this, these numbers will increase even more. So I'm very interested to see where this goes from here. But no, this isn't people moving towards being bisexual and gay. It's just people finally admitting it more and being more honest because the time is right. All right, guys, I'm out of time. I love you. I'll see you tomorrow. Peace.